Hey, everybody, what's going on?
Damn, I'm over here.
What are you doing in the other people's video?
What happened to Spock? He's not even on camera.
Somebody moved the camera.
Pookie did it.
Somebody moved the camera.
She was jumping up here earlier. Yeah. I just didn't notice.
Somebody moved the camera.
Yeah, Pookie did it.
Okay.
She must have been up here when I... Yeah, well, she jumped up here like about 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
And I had to usher her off. Because she's like, what? I want to stomp all over your keyboard.
There
Come
it
on.
Is. There it is.
All right. Yeah. I thought you were just going
to... move the camera.
She's up here. Well, she fucks around up here, I think, like when I'm not looking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this looks like this might be a little crooked. These are not the same. These legs are not the same size. This is technical difficulties, people.
Yeah, what else is
technical there? Difficulties.
Our whole lives are technical difficulties.
Yeah. All right.
That's how it feels to me sometimes.
All right.
I always have some shit going wrong with whatever the fuck it is. But yeah, so I think I vaguely remember on Friday Night Sidetrack Show that we were talking about how we should do some more really older horror and classic horror, which I've actually wanted to do for like a long time now. And I think King Kong was one of the ones that we brought up. So when we were scrolling through movies last night, you know, not gonna lie, Tom had been at the bar all day.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, do you want to do Godfather 2? And he was like, I'm too drunk to, like, follow that.
Yeah.
And it's, like, too long. So I was like, okay. So I go on HBO Max, and I'm, like, scrolling through there, and I'm like, oh, they have the original King Kong. And
yeah,
we said that we wanted to do that, and I've been wanting to revisit it. So I said,
yeah,
King Kong it is. That's, like, very, very easy to follow. We had just brought it up, so, yeah.
It's a fun movie.
It is very fun. And honestly, this is actually... I think it would be difficult to overstate how groundbreaking this film is in like lots and lots of different ways, not just in the special effects, which of course are mind-blowing for the time. I mean, people in the 30s, they must have shit a brick when they saw this fucking movie.
Yeah, well, there's some good shots, composite shots, where you have Fay Wray live action struggling inside a tree, and there's a tree behind her, and behind there there's a stop motion Kong and reaches down and grabs her, and it looks real good for the 30s. It looks real good. So you got live action and stop motion happening in the same frame.
I mean, they used a lot of... And actually, they had, like, a lot of new technique. Like, they pioneered a lot of techniques. I mean, obviously, like, all of the, you know, Kong and the dinosaurs and everything like that are stop motion. But they also did a lot of, like, rear projection. They did a lot of, like, compositing. They did a lot of different stuff. They would have a thing where... they'd have, like, an animated, like, a stop-motion animated sequence, like, Kong is, like, doing some shit up here, and then, like, down here, there'd be, like, a cave, and then there'd be, like, a miniature screen in there that was showing, like, some footage that they'd shot of the actors, so they did, like, all kind of tricks like that, and I think, like, a lot of the matte paintings and stuff were great, too, because a lot of them, like, they did them on glass, so they were kind of, like, you know, layered, you know?
Yeah.
So it looked like there was, like, a lot of depth of field, and it, like, looked really good. And I had forgotten... I mean, I saw this movie when I was a kid. I don't think I've sat through the whole thing, like, since then. But when I was watching it, I was like, man, I forgot how fucking violent this
Super
movie
violent.
Was.
Super violent.
I'm like, God damn it.
Doesn't pull any punches.
So many people get killed.
Yeah. Kong reaching over there and grabbing one of the damn tribal dudes from the fucking... island and just biting him.
He's like,
and his
snack.
Equal, he's fighting his mouth. Spit him out. And then later on, he just reaches in and sees a woman. He thinks it's his girlfriend, Fay Wray. He just looks at her and he's looking at her and going, no, it's not her. Just tosses her.
That was horrifying.
Yeah,
I'm super scared of heights. So.
Yeah.
So that, like, really horrifying.
Yeah, good shit.
I mean,
some people might look at this movie and go, man, this is terrible. It's all, you know, they're abusing these animals and it's all racist and everything. That is exactly, you're totally misreading this movie. It is saying exactly the opposite. It's saying you can't go around and just fucking killing all these giant animals,
swing your dick,
do whatever you want. And you can't go to some island and where there's another culture of people there, and because they're not as technologically advanced as you, doesn't mean that you can control Kong. Okay? Because when they got Kong back to New York, he fucked them up too. Okay.
I mean, but the thing about it, though, was that, I mean, when they did bring him to civilization, which they should not have done.
Yeah, it's saying don't do this.
He actually did get destroyed, which was sad. But like I said,
he did nothing wrong. Kong did nothing wrong.
That's what I'm saying.
Kong did nothing wrong.
That's what Slasher Fred is saying. Who do you think was the villain, Carl Denham or Kong himself?
The humans.
Well, Kong can't be a villain because he's just doing what Kong do.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't know any different.
He was king of his own island. He ran it, and they captured him. And
I mean, the natives that lived on the island were kind of like living in, I mean, they had to sacrifice somebody every now and then, but they were kind of living in an uneasy peace with all the other animals.
They
kind of like worked some shit out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, suddenly like all these dumbass, like
white dudes
stumble into this island and be like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to put this guy in a movie and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to do all this other stuff.
And they fucked over.
How'd that work out?
They fucked over the tribal people and Kong. By breaking this covenant that they had a system worked out, and these guys show up and says, "Oh, now you know we've got gas bombs and machine guns and you know ships and technology and you know the dude literally comes out and says Kong's going to learn to fear us and you know but,
he says that
Kong's
in
gonna,
the movie
Kong's going to learn what
and I was like Jesus Christ
you know he's going to learn to fear us and be under our control. No, didn't work out that way. You learned the same lessons that those natives learned. Just because you got a big old city full of skyscrapers, you're just like those people on that island.
I mean, Kong can still on you.
Yeah. He's kind of... he's just a... he's a metaphor for nature. You know? You're not going to really be able to... You know, no matter how great you think your city is and how good your technology is, you're not going to beat nature. Nature runs this. That's what the message is.
Yeah.
And you don't have a right to go in there and just start fucking up people's habitats. That's another thing.
And I definitely do think, I don't know that if Carl Denham and like the other people were specifically portrayed as villains, but I think you could totally read that into that. I don't think they were villains. They were just like ignorant and they were just kind of like blundering their way in there because they thought they knew better.
Yeah. And it looks like to me, the main character, he's supposed to be the hero. He's dumb as shit.
He wasn't actually the original guy. Yeah. That guy was actually the guy that played the main love interest dude.
Yeah.
He was actually the stunt because I'll get into like because this actually the movie like the story behind how this movie was made was actually just as interesting as the movie itself.
I'm not talking about that man. I'm talking about the character that he's being told to play. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but that might have something to do with the actor because I'm going to say that actor was not super experienced. He thought that he was being brought on as like the stunt performer for the actual actor, but they couldn't get the actual actor because he had to do some other shit.
He's so part of the He-Man Woman's Hater Club. All right, he's like
the He-Man Woman Hater Club.
Yeah, he's the He-Man Woman Hater
Club. Oh, you women, you're just a bother by your very nature.
Here.
He says
you're ruining everything. I mean, he's like Spanky, Alfalfa, Stymie, and all those guys from the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
Like
we don't have no girls in here. No girls.
With their boobies and
And then also, you know,
underwear.
I do kind of love you. You love me too, don't you? I mean, he just goes just that fast. And there's not much charm to the guy. And the way I interpreted the movie is that he was supposed to be kind of a generic guy of the 30s.
Thank you, Jeff E.R.
Who's blundering his way through this whole thing.
Yeah.
He survived. But he caused a lot of this shit in certain way, in some ways.
I mean, really his fault.
He wasn't in charge.
It was more Carl Denham's fault.
Yeah, he wasn't really in charge, but he was just doing what he was told, which is that's typical for the 30s and 40s and 50s. Those dudes mostly just did what they were told, you know.
Because he was just like the sailor, like the main sailor on the ship, right? The
way society was, you know, just in the West, you know, way guys were, it's a lot like what you'd see modern China. They just kind of, you know, they're one fish in a large sea, and it's just kind of, everybody's kind of the same. They're all kind of generic. They were like that. They just did what they were told. And they expected it'll all work out. You know, hey, you know, the authorities will work it out. Fucking, there was like, a lot of the guys were like that. They didn't question what they were being told or what they were doing.
Well, I kind of feel like...
they saw a dinosaur and they go, open fire!
That's what, like, yeah. And I had forgotten about that aspect of it. Like, literally, like, they get to Skull Island,
they
right?
They see a fucking Stegosaurus.
And it's a Stegosaurus. And shoot it!
Blitz. Yeah, open fire! Fucking, yeah.
I'm like, he's not bothering you.
Yeah, he's eating
plants. He's just Stegosaurusing over there.
He charged. Yeah, you shot him.
He's mad. But, yeah, so, yeah. But like I said, it was just kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if necessarily. I think the movie was just kind of like, because prior to King Kong coming out, I mean, obviously this was a massive success and, you know, they made like a bunch of, you know, they made a sequel and remakes and everything like that. But prior to this, there had been actually like a big tradition of jungle films, which usually had to do, you know, a lot of them were silent films or documentaries or mockumentaries. They actually did make some mockumentaries back then, too. But so it was usually kind of thing like, oh, you know, big white explorer, like, goes to some crazy place and then, like, finds some weird, like, fucked up specimen. So this wasn't coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But I do kind of feel like, so I don't know if it was necessarily, like, making fun of that trope or I don't know if making
fun of it.
Wasn't really making fun of it, but you could totally read it as these guys just, they show up on the island and literally just, like, start shooting,
killing shit.
Dinosaurs that are that are absolutely not doing anything to
them. Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's like I said, if the Stegosaurus had, like, come out and, like, started eating people, then okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but the Stegosaurus was just, herbivores.
It was just over there. And then there was a thing that was
a Brontosaurus.
It's a Brontosaurus. I know they don't call him Brontosaurus anymore, like back then they called it Brontosaurus. I'm like, that's an herbivore. Yeah. What are
they start shooting its head.
Although it ate a dude later. And I was just like, hey, fair play.
It ate him in self defense.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, you had that coming.
Yeah, that's all.
You had that coming.
And then they get there in the tribe that is pretty cool. They're kind of dressed in kind of Polynesian looking outfits, kind of like Hawaii or fucking something like that, you know. It was like very stereotypical tiki looking design, kind of. But they looked good, cool. They had big fucking headdresses and fucking spears. Their main, what they called a witch doctor.
I thought they looked badass.
Yeah, they looked good. Yeah, his their king. He had a big old long spear and a headdress. They wouldn't show his face real clearly. I think it was a white guy in a mask.
I don't think it was because I think that guy. Yeah. And actually, I was going to say, like, the a large amount of the cast of this, including Fay Wray, and including, I think, the guy that played the quote unquote witch doctor, they were in the producer, Marion Cooper, his last movie, Most Dangerous Game, which I think came out in 1932, which obviously was an adaptation of that really famous short story, had pretty much the same cast, and I think that guy was in it. His name's Noble something. Okay. Noble Roberts.
He was big. He looked like about 6'1", 6'2".
He looked like a big motherfucker, didn't he?
Big dude, yeah.
But it was a lot, and a lot of the sets and stuff like that were reused from that, too. Like, the jungle set was, I think they built it out some, but that was actually built for Most Dangerous Game. This was actually, the way that this movie was made, like I said, they kind of started out, like, they had the idea to do the movie. Like I said, they'd had all these jungle kind of movies, and it's like, I don't really think that this movie in particular, I don't think, particularly for the 1930s, I don't think that the way that the natives were portrayed were particularly racist.
No.
But some people have said that there had been a tradition of these kind of jungle movies, and in particular, there's one kind of notorious one, which had come out in 1930, 1931, something like that, which was called Ngagi, something like that. And it very specifically implied, one, it had white women in blackface, and two, it implied that black women were having sex with monkeys and having babies that were like half ape, half man.
Man, I never heard of that one.
So there was that.
Damn. That was from the 30s?
Yeah.
Damn.
So that kind of shit was going on. So I think actually for the time...
Was it a horror movie?
No, I think it was like a mockumentary. It was like part documentary and part... Because like I said, back in the 20s and 30s, like in the silent era and shit, people were all about all these kind of like, you know...
Expedition
kind of like white explorer goes into like darkest Africa and like finds all these... And like I said, they were even doing mockumentaries back then. Yeah. That is absolutely not a thing. Like they would shoot...
Fake documentaries.
Yeah, they would shoot real footage, but then they would like insert some other shit.
And this makes sense for the time. You know, in the 30s, you know, you take a lot of shit for granted. They didn't have satellites in the 30s. They weren't sure really how accurate the maps were. It was like a more sophisticated version of the 1700s, which wasn't that far from the 1500s. They thought there could be islands out there that we didn't know about that might be like going to another planet. So they were, and if you went to a place like Africa, I think somebody showed me some things that the British had computed based on statistics when they were down there in the 1800s or 1700s, which one of the two. Remember when they were looking for Dr. Livingston?
Yeah.
That guy? Well, the British corporations who were dealing with it down there worked out that said the average lifespan of a fucking white man down there was, I think it was like 16 months. That if you were running around in there, you know what I mean? Because there's, you know, it was tribal territories.
Yeah.
You'd make friends, but then those friends you made had enemies. They were fighting each other constantly. Sure. And your white ass was
stand out.
Yep. Yep. And they might not understand what it is that they're seeing. They might think that you're an evil spirit or something. You know what I mean? Because they had their own religions, or that you're possessed by a demon, and they'd kill you if they didn't really quite sure what you were. So you know. That would go, you know, white boys going to fucking the continent of Africa back in these days is kind of like going to the moon, you know what I mean? And they didn't have television, so you're trying to show a pretty kind of simple people by today's standards. You're trying to show them entertaining depictions of what it's like in faraway places, you know. But anyway, I think Kong was handled pretty well.
Yeah, especially, like I said, I've seen some other movies from the 30s that were way more problematic than this one.
The
people, this one was actually pretty.
Yeah, the people are
pretty tame.
Yeah, the black people in it are portrayed as people. They are in one scene they're fucking bravely fighting fucking Kong and dying, and they're fucking, you know,
they
Kong's
get eaten too, just alongside the white people. So it's not.
With Kong running, and there's a little baby girl crying. He's in the path, and then the mom has to run out and fucking rescue the baby.
She's like, "Fuck,
just in time," you know. So it's, you know what I mean. It was, they're just portrayed as anybody else, and then later on you find out, yeah, you white people are just like everybody else. Kong does the same thing to you when he gets to New York. So that's kind of the message behind the story. And I've picked up kind of an animal rights message to it. Don't go around fucking with the animals like that. You went into their habitat, you fucking killed them, and then you took one of them back to your place, and he fucked you up. He died, but you paid for it.
It's
clearly shown as kind of wrong.
Like I said, and I think even at the time, like when King Kong dies at the end, spoiler alert for a movie that's almost 100 years old, but, you know, when he dies at the end, like, people, you're supposed to feel bad.
Yeah.
I mean, because he didn't do anything. It's like, he was just Konging. He was
doing his thing.
He was doing his thing, and, like, these dudes blundered in and were like, ooh, we're gonna, like, put him on stage and, like, make all this money off him and exploit him. And they take him away from his home, and they take him away from everything that he knows, and then they put him on display, and he's like, he's like, fuck you guys, and busts out. Like, you know, you felt bad for him. And I said, I think even back then people felt bad for him.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing about it, too, this movie came out in 1933, which was, like, the lowest point of the Depression, really. But they said that this movie, I mean, there was lines around the block. They said they had to put the movie on like 24-hour cycles, like, because people were coming back to see it over and over again.
Oh yeah, it'd have been mind blowing.
This was the first, I think this was like the first quote unquote blockbuster movie. I know that a lot of people say, like, you know, 1975 Jaws was like the first big summer blockbuster, but to be honest, I think this was actually the first what we would term nowadays a blockbuster, in the sense that everybody went to see it, everybody was talking about it, they had to put more showings on, so people were going back to see it like multiple times. People were like, they loved this fucking movie. So much so that it was so successful that RKO, I think was who made it, they rushed a sequel into production, because that's how they do. The sequel, Son of Kong, which is actually like pretty decent.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember it being pretty good.
Maybe you gotta see it, yeah.
But they made it in like, what, like 9 months?
Oh shit.
It came out the same year.
Fuck.
Like, as soon as that was, like real successful, they were like, make another one really quickly.
Well, if you got enough money involved in the streamlined process, you could do it.
Yeah.
Although, I wouldn't mind seeing it. Although, watching the movie, there's really only two characters in the movie. Kong and Fay Wray.
Everybody
else are kind of interchangeable.
Well, I think that's that's why it's good, like, once they get to Skull Island, like, most of them get killed off.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think my favorite scene in the whole movie is when Kong is shaking all those motherfuckers off that log. And they're all like, they're all like falling down in the pit. And you know what? There was actually another scene there And I think the footage has been mostly lost. But after they all fell into the pit, as if it wasn't bad enough that they all fell into the pit after that, but then they got attacked by, like, giant spiders and eaten by giant spiders, like the ones that didn't die. But the thing about it is that this movie... Like I said, I had forgotten how fucking violent this was. Yeah. I forgot how many people, like, Kong stomped on and squished. I forgot how many people he ate.
Yeah.
And that chick in New York that he just, like, threw out the window. It's like, ah! I was just like, fucking hell. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Well, he was sick of women. He just wanted that one.
He thought it was her. He thought he was like, no, you're not the righteous, whatever. And she's like, shit! Can you imagine just be, like, sleeping in your fucking apartment in Manhattan and all of a sudden this big hand
comes in and grabs her.
And grabs her, and then she's like, why am I suddenly, like, falling 18 stories?
He was holding her upside down for a minute, too. And he just fucking looks like a
She's like, you're not
and
the right
just throws her. He fucking didn't even put her back.
No. Holy crap. For a movie that old, that, like, horrified me. Because I could imagine, like, obviously I know a giant ape isn't going to reach in my window, I don't think. Yeah. I mean, it's possible. But I was just like, can you imagine, like, what that would be like? Holy crap.
Now, Faye Ray, she does a good job in the movie. Did some iconic screaming.
She did all that screaming in one session.
Yeah.
Like, she went in the sound booth and did
her character is kind of like a typical 30s kind of movie young female, which is kind of like a lot like a modern Japanese girl. You know, like super, super femmy. She's like that. Physically, she's fucking cute. Real cute.
By the way, that was a wig.
It was a wig, yeah.
Because she wasn't... They wanted a blonde.
Yeah.
And Faye Ray is not a blonde.
Okay.
If you've seen her in... Because, like I said, she was also in Most Dangerous Game. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I asked
But yeah, she wasn't... They actually... They said they want a blonde because it would stick out better, like, against Kong's fur because it's dark. So they actually wanted Jean Harlow.
Right.
Or somebody like that that was blonde, but they mostly turned it down. So Faye Ray, like I said, she had worked on... Most Dangerous Game with the same producers, like, prior to this, and she's like, hey, I can just wear a blonde wig, you know, if you're that, like...
A lot of times in the 30s, the girls that have playing leads, where they're supposed to be kind of like the love interest, they're actually kind of too skinny, if you ask me. They're fucking skinny, kind of bony. Or sometimes they, you know, that was just what they... But Faye was... kind of thick for the time. It looks like she had been working out or doing ballet or something. They kept showing you her legs to let you know that she had muscular legs. But elegant looking. She was cute. But she could be a movie star today. She'd be, you know what I mean?
She's a beautiful girl.
I wouldn't put her
great in screamer a, too. Yeah. What a great screamer she was.
Her makeup and hair and the clothes are all kind of, you know, silver screen 1930s, you know, classic, I guess you call it silver screen. Which just kind of has that look, kind of classy look. But you were to put her in modern clothing, you'd never know. She could be a movie star today. She looked good.
I honestly love how, because I had forgotten a lot of the details about, because like I said, I've seen pieces of this, but I hadn't seen the whole thing straight through, like, since I was a kid. So I had forgotten a bunch of details about how Faye Ray ended up on the island, and Darrow, her character's name is. But she's basically, like, she's not homeless, but she's poor. So, like, she's stealing an apple, like, from a fruit seller, like, on the sidewalk.
It's Depression, man.
Yeah, because it's during the Depression.
Yeah.
And Carl Denham happens to see her and is like, hey, you want to be in my movie?
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
Like, the first thing about it, he takes her to get, like, some food or something because she's obviously, like, having some problems, like, financially. And he's like, pitching to her. He's like, yeah, I'm going to put you in the movies and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're going on a ship with a whole bunch of sailors.
With a whole bunch of sailors. And immediately she's just kind of like, wait, hang on. You want me to, like, get with the gangbangs? She doesn't say that, but
that's exactly what they're letting you know.
That's the implication was.
And he's like, no, it's on the up and up. I swear it's on the up and up.
I wouldn't buy it, though, still. Because that's like... I mean, back in the 1930s, maybe it was a more innocent time, I guess.
That was going on, though.
But, well, I know that, but I'm just saying that in a movie, people would maybe buy it. Yeah. I think the reason that she went along with it was because she'd heard of him. Because he's famous. I'm Carl Denham, like, I'm a movie maker, I'm not...
I guess we have to assume that when she agreed, she signed contracts, and there were legal contracts and documents after that, but they didn't put that in the movie.
Yeah, because that would be really boring.
Yeah, that'd be boring. But there was so.
But the whole thing about it, though,
imagine by the time she got on the boat, she knew who it was she was dealing with and where she was going.
I would hope so.
Yeah,
because she seemed real kind of like cash about it. She's just kind of like, okay, we're gonna, yay, this is so exciting. We're going on a ship I've never been on once.
Well, it might have been the way it was like. Well, they did mention that. Well, remember how towards the end when they were in New York, they said, "Oh, another gorilla." The girl goes, "Oh, New York's filled with gorillas."
Yeah,
talking about all the guys were gorillas and shit, and fucking, and then
she's like,
then,
"Yeah, this is nothing that I."
And then another dude
before.
Made a wisecrack in the fucking audience that the women were all the New York women were all sluts, basically. That's what the wisecrack was.
Yeah, pretty much.
And another dude complained that he spent $20 on these tickets. And we're probably saying, yeah, it's probably like $200 or $250.
Yeah, how much was... I meant to check, and then I forgot. But, yeah, how much was $20? Yeah, when they first brought Kong to, like, New York City, I paid $20 for these tickets. And I was like, man, that was a lot of money back in 1933.
They got all
during the Depression.
Rich old lady says that we're going to see a gorilla. And she goes, she wasn't too impressed. But they were all dressed to the nines, you know, and this is some real expensive theater in New York. Probably a real theater, but I don't know what its name would be.
Yeah, it was on Broadway somewhere.
And, you know, there was no TV then, you know? Fucking, you had to go see a show. It was a big fucking event, you know? Big social event. You had to dress up and have your hair done and jewelry and, you know, in those days, in the 30s, fucking New York was the fucking king of the world. I mean, you know, that was one of the biggest, brightest, biggest, tallest city probably in the world. Electric power, big, tall skyscrapers. You had the damn Empire State Building, that at that time was the tallest building in the world. Although I think Chicago was probably coming close to New York around that same time. Chicago and Detroit were similar,
yeah,
at that time. But so it's kind of fitting that they took Kong there, because that was the newest high-tech city. They bring him there and he fucks it up. Well, it just kills a bunch of people and then dies, but.
I mean,
Kong
even
didn't know about airplanes.
Even now, like the scene where he's at the very top of the Empire State Building and like with all the planes, that still stresses me out because, like I said, I don't like heights.
Yeah, and so, they're shooting him in the neck, and he's like, "What is this?"
I felt so bad. I know he ate a bunch of people and stomped on a bunch of people and stuff like that. But like I said, he's just like a big gorilla. He doesn't know.
People are fucking with him,
and he's just like, that's
nowhere to go.
That's just what he does, and he's just like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of sad. But wait, I wanted to like say something like Juan Ramirez said Kong was the inspiration for all monster movies that came after. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you could kind of say, I don't know, I kind of feel like maybe some people said, oh, it was like the first kaiju movie, but that's kind of like a slightly different thing, because kaiju movies are usually like radiation, like causes big, like superpowered creature. Whereas this was actually, I mean, King Kong was like a natural creature. And so Skull Island was just kind of supposed to be like, you know, it had dinosaurs, like, and pterodactyls and shit like that. So it was kind of like supposed to be like a lost world, you know what I mean?
Best of the kaiju movies was Gojira, the first one.
Well, yeah.
The black and white one. It was actually like a serious film, Gojira. They ended up calling it Godzilla here in the United States, but that's not the name of it. After that, they started to get goofy. But yeah, Gojira is definitely based on Kong. You know, it's trying to be serious.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it, like I said, this King Kong didn't come out of nowhere. It kind of came out of the cultural. Like I said, there have been a lot of these kind of jungle movies, which were really popular, that were either just fictional movies or documentaries or mockumentaries. And you have to think, too, that back in the 20s and 30s, most zoos and stuff like that didn't really have, like, gorillas or primates or anything like that. So a lot of people in the United States, particularly, had never really seen an ape or a gorilla, like, in person. So there was kind of, like, a big... So it seemed, like, very exotic.
Now, after this one, there was another movie I remember as a kid that used to play it a lot. I haven't seen it in a long, long time. I want to see it again. And it was kind of like Kong, but it was a gorilla that was a hero. It was called Mighty Joe Young.
Well, that's the same producers.
Yeah, I want to see that one again. I remember liking Mighty Joe Young, too.
Yeah, I liked that as well. Yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember.
He's a heroic gorilla, and he got a girlfriend, basically. Well, she's a trainer. I don't remember what happens to him, though. I think he got killed, too, I think. Been a long time since I've seen it. I liked it. I remember liking Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah.
He's not giant, though. He's just normal size.
Well, I thought I saw. Well, I thought he was like bigger. A little bit.
He's a little
giant.
Bit bigger than a normal.
He's not as big as King Kong.
No, he might be about 10 feet tall. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Juan says Mighty Joe looks a lot more like a real gorilla.
Yeah. He looks
yeah.
Real,
I will
more
like
real.
King Kong looks a little weird, but like I said, he was just. I mean, that was stop motion animation. You have to think this is the first movie that had an entire character that was entirely stop motion, right? Yeah. This was also. I don't know if you guys know, but this was also the first movie that had like a custom written score, like an orchestral score. Hmm. Prior to this, because you have to think this is 1933, so, you know, talkies hadn't really been around for that long. But prior to this, you just used, like, stock music behind the movies. But when they were doing this one, they had the guy that did the music was kind of like, ooh, you know, maybe we could do music that actually, like, matches up with the action. You know what I mean? Which hadn't been done before. Yeah. So that's what I mean when I say that this was, like, really groundbreaking in more ways than just, like, the special effects and the big monster and everything like that. It was also the first movie that had, like, a custom-tailored score that, like, went with all the stuff that was happening rather than just using, like, already kind of stock stuff out of the library or whatever. Juan says they used several different puppets that were not identical, so he changes from scene to scene. Yeah, they did. Well, they had a bunch of different ones. They had, like, a life-size, because I think that King Kong was supposed to be, like, 18 feet tall, I think.
Okay.
So, they had, like, a life-size, head and chest.
Yeah.
Which they used when he was popping people in his mouth and whatnot. And then they had a life-size hand and arm.
Yeah.
And then they had a life-size foot.
Yeah, he was stomping people.
Yeah, all the other stuff were, like, were miniatures. And they were usually, they said they would usually do, like, an inch to a foot. So they were, like, 18 inches. So they had, like, several 18-inch, like, armature ones. Now, the thing about King Kong, though, is that back in the day, I mean, Willis O'Brien was, somebody said earlier, he was the man. Yeah, I mean, Ray Harryhausen saw this movie when he was a kid, and he's like, that's what I want to do. I want to do that stop motion animation shit.
Yeah.
So,
thus, Sinbad.
Right.
Oh, man, I love
it. So, I mean, yeah, so it's, like I said, it's really hard to overstate, like, how groundbreaking these special effects were for the time, and how, you know, time-consuming and, like, painstaking they were, that they had, like, all of these little, because it wasn't just the King Kong, but it was, like, all the dinosaurs and shit like that, too. They had, like, the pterodactyl and all the dinosaurs and the big snake and all that.
I remember when I was a kid, it was a smorgasbord monster movie. Every fucking scene there, when they were on that island, you had something to see. Something new was going to come. Pterodactyls, brontosauruses, stegosaurus. They had some other giant stuff, didn't they?
There was another
have a giant bug. No, that was no. In the remakes.
Like I said, there was a giant spider scene, but it was cut out.
Okay.
And I think they lost the footage. And somebody mentioned that in the Peter Jackson remake, they actually did an homage to that, like where they redid it. But that's the thing, because I think what happened with this, came out in 1933, its original run. That was pre-code, like pre-Hays code. Now, because it was so successful, they kept re-releasing it, like, every few years. They re-released it in 1938, and by then, the Hays Code had come in, so they cut a bunch out. So, after that, like, from the late 1930s, I think until the 1960s, if I'm not mistaken, you saw, like, a truncated version of King Kong, because they cut a bunch of stuff out, like a lot of
the chewing people and
where the brontosaurus ate the dude, like on the tree and shit like that, like all the real you know, them squishing the dudes and shit. So they took all that out because they thought it was too violent. Oh, and also the part where, you know, where he's like poking at Fay Wray and then sniffs his fingers, they took that part out too.
So
they took all that shit out. Yeah, but in the 1960s, they actually found that in the UK, there was an uncut, like a high quality, like uncut version where all that stuff hadn't been cut out. So from then on, they actually restored all the footage to the American one.
But the spider one isn't there.
No, because that was cut out like early on, like before they released it the first time.
It didn't look good?
I don't know if they thought it didn't look good or they just thought it was too much or it wasn't, or it didn't look good enough. I don't really know what it was. They were just kind of like, they just cut it out. I think before even like the original
movies. One of the things, she was talking about cutting out the violence. One of the things that was in there in this one that I don't really remember was it was kind of a creepy scene where they got the tribal girl that they're gonna sacrifice, and they got her kneeling on a mat.
And, yeah, and she's like, shit.
Yeah, she had her eyes were like fucking this big, and they're putting flowers on her and shit. Fucking, it was like, kind of creepy.
Great,
because she's like, I'm gonna die. They're giving me the calm. Fucking, you know what I mean? And then the guy they're calling the witch doctor fucking sees Faye, and he says, "Oh no, we'll trade for her."
The golden woman.
Yeah, he's never seen one of them. He's getting bored of these.
That's it's like, ooh, that's a good one. Let's take that one.
Yeah, they were gonna give like 30 women for her. You know, which yeah they. They might do something like that. That's a new one. We're going to give him one of these new ones. That'll buy us a lot of time. Because if you look at the damn wall that they built, it was pretty sophisticated. And it had evidently been there a long time. So I imagine it sucked up a lot of resources to keep fucking Kong back on his side of the island. So if you gave him something, you could buy yourself time.
Yeah, keep him from crashing through.
Keep him from crashing through. And you keep,
because he so did you that go, eventually. He so, did, he, yeah. so
he could get through it.
If he really wanted to.
And they were up on the damn battlements fighting him with spears and shit. They got fucking annihilated. Yeah.
But they jumped right in there. They jumped right in there to fight him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, had to
saving,
like...
Saving their countries.
Almost all the white dudes got killed.
Yeah, all the white, yeah.
Even though they had guns and bombs and everything.
Yeah, they eventually gassed him. Knocked him out.
And knocked him out.
Yeah.
I kind of like... I was, interestingly, I was going to say, too, that, like, actually the first draft of the script of this was written by the very famous British mystery writer Edgar Wallace, who I've actually read a couple of his things. Because his stories were the basis of a couple of, like, giallo movies, like What Have You Done to Solange and stuff. So he wrote the first draft of this, which was called The Beast. But he died before they could finish it up. So it went through a lot of other iterations. Now, interestingly, the main version, as well as, like, the title, because originally the title for this, like I said, it was first The Beast, then it was going to be called The Eighth Wonder or The Eighth Wonder of the World, which is not a great title, but whatever. But when they brought in Ruth Rose, who was actually the wife of one of the producers, Ernest Shedzak, and she had never written a screenplay before, but they gave her the screenplay and said, see what you can do with that. And she, like, tightened it all up. And she, like, took out a bunch of the dialogue, changed up a bunch of the dialogue, like, made it a lot better. And she basically, like, they were really into, like, what she did with it. And one of the things that I liked that she did was, you know how, like, they do the whole thing where they gas Kong. And they're like, wait, I'm going to take this to New York City. We're going to make $1 million or whatever. Yeah. And then they just cut to him, like, already thing. She's like, the original version of the script actually had them, like, oh, doing, like, the logistics of them, like, how did we get him, like, off this island into New York City? And she was like, fuck all that. We don't need to see all that. They got him to New York somehow. That's boring. So it's like, she just kind of, like, streamlined it right to, and I like that they did that they didn't do all that unnecessary kind of, like, bullshit about
how
they got him.
There was some hidden messaging in there that might have been lost on younger generations, especially modern generations, having to do with those airplanes. They took Kong from his homeland, all right? They said, he will learn to fear us. We have technology. They take him to New York, train him up, treat him like shit. They're humiliating him. He gets out. They can't control him. He gets out, kills a bunch of people, runs to the top of the Empire State Building. The guys at the bottom says, what are we going to do now? No, we'll get him with those, what do you call them? Airplanes. Yeah, that's we'll right. get him with some airplanes. That's right.
Oh, yeah, airplanes. Right. I forgot we had those.
Well, they hadn't been around for long. It hadn't been around for all that long.
That's true.
After World War I.
Yeah.
So they send airplanes at Kong. And you're supposed to realize how unfair that is. He's getting shot in the throat, and he's looking, he's, you know what I mean? And he gets one of them.
What the fuck's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? And then he gets one airplane, but they gun him down. Well, this is before World War II. The people haven't really kind of realized how much warfare has changed. In World War I, the Turks showed up with cavalry to the battle space, and enemy fighter planes just chewed them up with machine guns, wiped them out. And they were like, this isn't fair. This isn't warfare. You're cheating. You know, warfare changes constantly. So that's kind of the message, that warfare is cheating. You know? And Kong didn't know how to cheat. He was kind of honest. Human beings are kind of dishonest. They cheated. They didn't go down there on the ground and fight him, you know, man to man. And so that was part of the tragedy that you're supposed to, because, you know, you're supposed to feel sorry for him.
Well, yeah. And I think I mean, unless you're a sociopath.
You're right.
When you watch King Kong.
Yeah.
You feel bad when he dies at that. I felt bad. Yeah. I think everybody feels
bad. So the message was, the white man kind of won in the end, but it was a Pyrrhic victory. You dishonored yourself. You had to cheat to do it.
Yeah.
That's what
I kind of feel like that's probably why the movie won was such a classic, even though I don't think that people would necessarily think that that was why, but I think that's why it's kind of like endured for this long as well, because like you said, it almost does like have a weird animal rights message, and I don't even think that they meant to do that necessarily. I think they were just trying to make like a cool like jungle adventure fantasy story.
They're trying to put realism in there and make characters
and trying to do that, but
the right way, you know.
But I kind of feel like, I mean, maybe they were, I don't know, it was a long time ago, but I kind of feel like accidentally they were just kind of like, hey, maybe we shouldn't fuck with things that we don't understand, or it's like we're going into a part of the world that we don't really have any business in, like we don't, you know.
Well, Jog Boy said Beauty killed the beast. No, he didn't. Fucking machine guns killed him from airplanes.
That's what I was saying. I was like, she didn't have shit to do with it.
Right, yeah.
She was just pretty and he liked her.
Right. But I think the audiences of the time kind of understood what the real message was.
I'm like, no, you bitches killed him by bringing him here.
Because Kong was the hero of the movie, really.
I
think he was the star of the movie, and I think people liked Kong. Right? They wanted to see Kong again.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had a son of Kong.
Like I said, he didn't.
And people liked him. And then Mighty Joe Young is definitely the hero in Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Like I said, it just seemed to me that unless you have some kind of, like, empathy problem, I kind of feel like you're supposed to feel bad at the end of King Kong.
Yeah.
You know, because he didn't do anything to deserve that. It's like, yeah, he ate some people. Yeah, he stomped on some people. But he's an animal. You know what I mean? It's like he was just doing what he did. That was his nature. And it's like, yeah, it's bad for us. And it's like bad that he ate people and stuff. But he doesn't know any different. And so the fact that people that absolutely did know better came in there and were like, hey, we can exploit this for money. And took him to a place where he, you know, didn't belong. And he fucked it all up. He pulled that woman out of the thing. That, I don't know. That really, like, stressed me out, that whole fucking scene. And the whole fucking scene where he climbs up the outside of the Empire State. Like, I've been up the Empire State Building, and I did not like it. Thank you. I mean, I felt like I had to. I was like, I'm going to New York City. I was like, you kind of have to go up the Empire State Building, right? It's like, you can't say that you've gone to New York without going up there. So I went up there. But, I am terrified of heights. So I went up there and I just like, I very slowly, like I hung on to like the shit, like all the way to the thing. I'm like, looked over, I'm like, okay, I've done it. Bye. Let's go. please let me go down back to the ground now. So yeah, that stressed me out. So it stresses me out when I see it in a movie and shit too. John Gore said, Son of Kong is pretty weak. They made his heir small simply to all the humans and all around silly. Yeah. Well, I mean, we should probably watch that as well. Cause I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but
I remember liking Mighty Joe Young though. But I haven't seen it in a long time.
Juan says,
that one?
I remember vaguely. I saw that when I was a kid too.
I remember liking it. I remember it being a more positive. You know, it's kind of more of upbeat. But we'll see. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, Juan says, I like how Anne never gets lovey-dovey with Kong at any point, like in the remake. Yeah, I mean, she didn't. I guess I'd kind of, like, forgotten because I've seen so many of, like, the remakes and the subsequent kind of commentary in the film. But in the original movie, she's not, like, into Kong at all. She's just like, oh, my God, it's a monster. And, like, she's just screaming and trying to get away from him the whole entire time. She's not like, oh, he's kind of sexy. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
where I
kind
of feel
this?
Like in the...
When did
well,
this
no,
happen?
Like, the remake...
The 70s remake?
Well, the 70s remake and the 2000s remake... I don't, like, she wasn't like, ooh, sexy big ape, but she felt, like, sympathy with him.
Yeah.
Where I feel like in the original film, she didn't really. She just kind of, like, saw him as a monster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
maybe she felt, Well, from their point of view, yeah. Sure. Like, but I mean, maybe she felt bad, like, at the very end, like, when he fell off the building and was dead and everything.
Well, he thought he was protecting her.
Yeah.
He thought he was protecting her. Remember, like, he was protecting her from the pterodactyls? The giant pterodactyls?
Yeah.
He thought he was protecting her.
Because, holy shit. Oh, that was another fucking scene that stressed me out. Like, when she was up on the kind of ridge there, and the pterodactyls came and, like, started carrying her. I'm like,
trying
oh, my God.
Carry
her
away.
Oh, my God. I would shit
my pants.
He
was fighting something else at the time. I don't remember what it was.
Well, he was fighting the snake inside the cave. And then, then the pterodactyl came while,
he was distracted.
While he was distracted.
He got that, yeah. The
and he had to pull that down.
I remember in one of the remakes, she was dancing for him to keep. That was one of the newer remakes. Dancing for him to keep stay on his good side. That worked. He was watching her fucking snitch.
I mean, I kind of feel like we watched. How long ago did we watch the 1976 one? It wasn't that long ago.
About a year ago, maybe.
It was maybe like a year ago.
I think we were living here though, weren't we?
That's what I'm saying. So I thought we watched it like pretty recently. Yeah. I thought we watched it like 6 months ago
It's not bad.
I remember seeing that at the drive-in.
It's okay.
When I was a kid.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't age that well. You can do it, you know, it's definitely a dude in a suit walking around a bunch of miniatures. But I don't remember it looking that obvious back in the days.
No.
Before
and the thing about the original King Kong is that at no point is it a man in a suit.
Right.
It is always stop motion animation. Yeah. And in a way, I think that kind of makes it
works
better.
Works a lot better.
I think. I mean, and all the dinosaurs and shit work too. Because the thing about it was that I don't even know if they were initially going to have dinosaurs in it. I think the original concept was giant ape fights Komodo dragons.
Yeah.
That was the original concept. The reason they went with dinosaurs was because the studio, like RKO, was also making this other movie with stop-motion dinosaurs that was called Creation that was costing them, like, a fuck-ton of money. And when the producers approached him about the giant ape thing, he's like, hey, let's cancel that Creation dinosaur thing, and we'll put the dinosaurs and the guy that was making the dinosaurs, who was Willis O'Brien, into this movie. And we'll also use the jungle sets from Most Dangerous Game. So he was trying to, like, economize.
The only Kong spinoffs I remember really liking was Kong Skull Island. I wanted to get that on Blu-ray, and I never got around to it. I liked Kong Skull Island. The Godzilla remakes, I remember enjoying them in the theater, but I couldn't tell you anything about them. They were fucking vapid. It was just vapid fucking CG fightings of big fucking dinosaurs, and it didn't matter.
Which, I mean, I'm not averse to, like, monster fights. I like that kind of stuff too, but
Skull Island, I like that one the best out of them.
That one was the most fun. Yeah. I felt like that was the most fun.
Yeah.
Camp Guy said, is that the one with Jack Black? Yeah, Jack Black was in that one, right?
Yeah, I remember it being okay. I remember it being
I remember it being pretty fun.
Yeah.
Juan says, Rick Baker did the suit in the 76 remake. It's a decent suit. Yeah, but, I mean, you can still tell it's a suit.
You can still tell it's a deep.
But the thing about it, though, and like I said, I saw that in the drive-in when I was a kid. I think it was maybe second run, so I probably saw it when I was, I don't know, 7, 8, something like that. And I remember really liking it, but we watched it a few months ago, probably like 6 months ago or something like that. It's still good, but I was surprised by how much like slow bullshit there was in it.
A lot of
before.
Talk.
And honestly, the original King Kong, it's an hour and 40 minutes, which I feel like was, I don't know, was that long for movies in the 30s? I feel like they were shorter back then. But, man, like you said, it doesn't fuck around. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much every single scene is necessary. You know, it basically just starts out with the filmmaker, and he's like, hey, I'm looking for, like, a dame for my movie or whatever. And, you know, and then pretty much they get on the ship, and then there's, like, so there's always, like, something going on. It's, like, pretty action-packed. And as I said, once they get to the island, man, there's some great scenes, big monster fights. Like I said, still my favorite scene, and I love the way it was shot. I love fucking King Kong shaking all those dudes off the log. And they're all just, they're all just like screaming. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
He's killing everybody.
Yeah.
He's killing everybody.
Yeah, and it was good how they did it, because he's stop motion, but he's moving a real miniature log.
Yeah.
And he's moving a real log, and there's real dudes on it. And then in other shots, I think it's some claymation guys on a miniature, but the transitions are pretty slick. Each angle was seeing a different thing. You can tell it's not real, but it looks good.
They used so many just techniques in this that hadn't been used before. And the way that they combined them, it looks quote unquote crude by today's standards. It was the 1930s. That was almost a century ago.
The shots are artistic.
Yeah, and honestly, it still looks really good. Yeah. I was really amazed, like watching it, you know, with a kind of critical special effects eye. I'm going to say, like, all that, it's always going to look, you know, even the shittiest stop motion, I think, is going to look better than, like, shitty CGI.
Oh, yeah, much better.
There's a charm to it.
Now, that classic Kong movie is artwork. It's a classic work of art.
Yeah, and so it looks great.
It looks good, yeah.
All the jungle shots, like I said, that's such depth of field, because it's all, like, these matte paintings on glass. It looks fantastic.
You're just supposed to enjoy it. And it wouldn't be as good in color. You want it to be in black and white. You want it to take you into the past. That's what it does.
Did any motherfucker ever try to, like, colorize that? They probably did. Ted Turner do that?
Man, it'd be like pissing on it.
John Gore said CGI has no magic. I mean, CGI has its place.
Yeah.
But...
See Fury Road.
Yeah. Fury Road, that's CGI done right. I think the only time that you should use CGI is just to clean up stuff that's mostly practical.
Yeah,
you can do it in camera, do it in camera.
The CGI in Fury Road, they used real cars. They were really jumping off of shit. Everything's really there, but they're using CGI to get rid of tire tracks in the sand from earlier takes. And they're using CGI to get rid of safety harnesses and wires that are fucking... Because some of those guys are jumping from car to car, they're on a safety wire.
I would hope so, because otherwise they'd get fucking killed.
Not in the old Road Warrior. In the old Road Warrior, they just fucking jumped onto the fucking truck, you know?
Am I insured? Okay.
legal problems. So that's really how you should do it.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I'm not a big fan of, and, you know, it's a lot better nowadays, I guess, but I'm not a big fan of, like, complete characters that are created out of CGI.
Yeah.
Because it never quite looks real.
No. Now, some people have said, well, that when that rolling fucking concert truck crashed, that was CGI. No, it's not.
No, it wasn't.
It's real. It's just that they shot
it. We saw all the behind-the-scenes shit.
It shot at a certain frame rate.
That was absolutely
not. And the flames coming out of the guitar was not CG. It's real. That thing really did split. They just used color treatment on it. It looked a little redder. It looked super red. But that's real flame. It's a real flamethrower.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't have a problem with, like, cleaning stuff up afterward or doing color grading or, like, adding little touches here and there. But I think the problem arises when you're creating entire characters or creating entire backdrops or landscapes and stuff like that in CGI. It just doesn't look as good, I feel like. And like I said, they weren't doing it. I mean, back in the old days, they shot stuff on sound stages, and, like, a lot of times for backgrounds they'd use matte paintings, but at least somebody, like, actually painted that. You know, that's like a piece of art. And I'm not saying, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying that, like, computer stuff isn't a work of art too, but I don't know. It just doesn't look as good. It doesn't look as...
Yeah, John Goris brings up how Lou Ferrigno is going to always be better than the damn CGI Hulk. You're right. Lou Ferrigno fucking, to me, is the fucking Hulk. All right.
That's the thing when you
he
get...
He was a dude who was really standing there, and fucking Lou was that big.
Well, see, that's the problem, too.
And he had
too,
character.
That... Yeah.
He had... Lou... The Lou Ferrigno Hulk had facial expressions that were real, and you knew that was a real dude, and he's... going back down to normal and shit, you know, and he's calming down, he's going back to turning back into fucking Bill Bixby. And when you're a kid, you know, and you could watch it today, and it's better. It's better. When you're a kid, you're just immersed in that experience. Go, yeah, I know how you feel. I know how you feel. I do the same thing when I get mad. I turn green too, you know, that kind of shit. You know, fucking. Yeah. When I get mad, I get that size too. Yeah. They should have never did you wrong. You know, they deserved it.
Juan says, I never thought stop motion looked real, but it always looked cool, and that's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's why people still talk about Ray Harryhausen to this day. That's why people still talk about Willis O'Brien to this day. Because, yeah, it doesn't look real, but it's just cool. It's stylized. It's a movie. There's a lot of what you're getting into.
There's a lot of stuff in Mad Max and Road Warrior that doesn't look real, but it looks cool. It was done with edits. You know, like the guy's eyes popping out. That was just all edited in there. It doesn't look real. It's just fucking... the editing, the timing of it, the way everything's happening, it just looks cool.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to look real.
Yeah, a lot of it was real, but there's some of it that wasn't real. Just, you know, editing it together into a work of art, that something that brings emotion out of you.
Yeah.
Using visual stimulation.
Juan says, absolute perfection is boring. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Something has to have, like, some character, some interest.
Yeah.
Just like
some of those early 80s movies and 70s movies were like that, with limited budgets, but a lot of heart behind.
Yeah, I think that's kind of why I like a lot of that stuff. Like, and I'm not saying that I don't like movies nowadays, because I do, but the movies that I tend to like nowadays tend to be ones that are more, like, independent or don't have a lot of special effects. Like, a lot of ones that are real, you know, heavy on the visuals or heavy on, like, the spectacle... some of them I like, but a lot of them are just kind of like, they're good, but they're just kind of samey. They don't really stand out. They don't really have a lot of character. That's
all. Well, we saw a low-budget movie that was fucking great, a post-apocalyptic movie about the little person and the woman. They were the last sole survivors.
Yeah,
what was the name of that thing? I forgot the name of that
movie. Yeah, we just did that. Like,
and there wasn't any money.
I think we're alone now.
Think we're alone now. Yeah, you can
like
see
that,
for free.
Like that song.
Yeah, that's a great little post-apocalyptic movie. Almost kind of like, not as wacky as Boy and His Dog, but it kind of had darkness to it. But I liked it. But it just goes to show, you can make a money with, you can make a movie with no money.
I mean, it doesn't have to be spectacle.
Mm-mm.
You know what I'm saying? Everything doesn't have to be like superheroes punching each other and like big, like
story,
you know, that
and atmosphere.
That's cool, but
yeah.
I mean, just give me like an interesting story or like characters I give a shit about or something like that. You don't need all that. You don't need all those bells and whistles usually.
Just a movie filmed in empty, kind of abandoned places and empty houses and empty fucking towns, you know.
Just. I saw a good one today that actually I'm going to put up a review for it later this week. It came out in 2017. It's like, I don't want to call it a horror movie. It's actually more of a psychological thriller, I guess. And it was called Super Dark Times. Have any of you guys seen that? But it was actually kind of like... that was another one that I don't think was, like, super, had much of a budget or anything like that, but, man, that, like, it fucking kept me on the edge of my seat the whole entire time. Like I said, you don't really need a lot of money if you know what you're doing. If it's a good story and I'm, like, into the characters and I give a shit about what happens to them, you don't need, like, big fucking monsters fighting and stuff like that. Not that I'm averse to that. I do like that sometimes, but I will take, like, artistic, like, a cool stylized looking thing or, like, some... cool characters and shit like that, like, every time. So I think that's why I like a lot of those old, like, stop-motion movies. I like a lot of movies from, like, the 1930s. I like a lot of silent movies. Even though, obviously, by today's standards, like, the special effects are, you know, really rudimentary, if you want to say that. But they had, like, some fucking style to them. And I like to kind of, like, cast myself back to that time period, being like, man, what would people of that time have thought, like, when they saw this movie? Like, that this must have been, like, really, like, fucking mind-blowing. Which is what I said that last night when we were watching King Kong. I was just like, man, people must have fucking shit a brick when they saw this thing. Because it was, yeah, special effects have been done. Like, I've seen movies from, like, the late 1800s that had, like, trick camera effects and stuff in them. You know, George Méliès did a bunch of that stuff, but nothing that had been done, like, to this extent. You know what I'm saying? Where they used, like, so many different techniques and, like, they had a whole character that was stop motion and, you know, just, I don't know, it just seemed like it was this big, like, milestone in movie making history. I feel like this is one of those movies that you absolutely have to see.
Yeah. That's probably about all we can say about this, though, I think.
I mean, probably. Yeah. I don't think there are any... Pat Hatfield said... Pat Hatfield actually said earlier that... that he enjoyed Mighty Joe Young a little bit better than the original.
I remember liking it better than Kong.
I remember liking it, but I haven't seen it in a long time. Pat Hatfield also said superheroes punching each other is losing its charm because you see it so often.
Yeah.
I think one of the main problems that I have, and this is, it's becoming less of a problem as CGI gets better, but one of the problems that I had with some of the, like superhero movies and stuff like that is because they can't ever capture motion correctly. It's always like just too fast. It's a little bit too fast and too weightless, and it always just like it really, really sticks out to me.
The last Spider-Man was pretty good.
Where I will say that. I did like the last Spider-Man.
Had all the Spider-Mans in the same movie. That was pretty good. They even brought back the Goblin. It was good to see him back. They had all the damn bad guys. That was a pretty good one. But a lot of that shit just, it's too much, man. Too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I said, I would kind of rather, I mean, Zach just said, that's why I love movies from the 70s so much, because they have a lot of character and personality. The filmmaking, you don't see too much anymore. Yeah, I kind of feel like
they're generic.
Well, I mean, I feel like the 70s in particular was kind of like, late 60s to late 70s was kind of like the heyday of like the auteur. Where, you know, you had these big directors that were kind of given a free hand to do whatever they wanted. And I think that usually, yes, I know every film is like a, you know, a group effort because a lot of people have to work on it. But I kind of feel like if you have just one really strong, like, artistic vision, I think that usually works out. Like, and I think it's better if that vision is, like, really idiosyncratic because it's really, like, you know, the personality of, like, the director comes out.
A lot of those Marvel superhero movies, they're very generic. They're kind of like a watered-down generic ride at Disneyland. There's not a lot of content in there. You know, they show you a bunch of stuff. A lot of stuff happens. But there's not a lot of meaning to it, to me. It's not very weighty. Like, all that shit happened, but you're like, yeah, so what? And I think it's because the way the studios operate. Jenny mentioned it earlier. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. So if somebody says something, or if you have one message, you have to have another message and another message and another message and... So I think what the deal is that they start to kind of strip as much of the fucking intellectual content out of the story as possible. Therefore, that there isn't any conflicts in the messaging.
They're trying to make everybody happy because they want everybody to go see it and like it, and you're just never going
to... So it's just going to be... So the best way to make everybody happy is not to have any kind of message per se... it's just a big spectacle, like a ride at Disney. It doesn't really mean anything. But then I'd look behind me at all these fucking people just geeking out on it, like it's a cult, you know, and like they're seeing the gods or something. Like, they're really buying into it. And I'm, like, going, yeah, it's kind of empty spectacle, you know? So what?
Well, I mean, the thing about it, though, is that I don't want to, like, shit on anybody's fandom because some people do, like, kind of follow all those characters in the comics and they're interested to, like, see how the movies... And some people, like, really are into all those movies. So I'm not, like, super, super into that. But, I mean, I geek out about other things that I'm sure other people would think were completely lame, so I'm not going to get too much, like...
The thing is that I can understand geeking out on Harry Potter. Because there's at least a bunch of books and a bunch of characters that do things and they say things and they talk. In those Marvel movies, there's not a lot of character shit going on, really. There's not a lot of story, really. There is story, but it's very simple. It's mostly spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
You know what I mean? So I can't get any kind of emotional connection to it, is what I'm saying.
I'm
I don't care that Iron Man punched that other dude. I don't give a shit.
Care, yeah. But it's like I've seen some of the movies, but I haven't like seen all of them, and so I'm not really like into all the character arcs and everything like that. So, because like I said, I'm more of a horror girl.
First couple seasons of Daredevil were fucking fantastic. I mean, that's how you do it. But there was a lot of
because it was a smaller story.
It's a smaller story. There's a lot of writing and a lot of shit happened. It's a smaller story.
Because I kind of feel like the bigger you get, like the more, like the less you can relate to it. The less you can relate to it. Like the less an average person can relate to it. I kind of tend to like, I'm not, you know what? And even though I really like horror and stuff like that, I tend to like not like more like real big world building kind of stuff. Like, I'm not even really all that into like Lord of the Rings or anything like that. I can see how people are, But once things get past a certain where it goes like epic scale, I'm just kind of like, I start like losing interest by degrees. Yeah. I kind of feel like I like more intimate stories where it's just like a handful of characters that I can actually like give a shit about and what are they up to. When it gets to be this whole like world thing, I think that's kind of why I'm not super into like big zombie apocalypse movies or things like that, because it just seems like, I was like, that's too much. I don't know. It's just too much to like keep a handle on at once. I'm not like super into it. I can see how other people are, but
yeah, Pat, I saw the animated Into the Spider-Verse. I saw that one. That one was really good.
That was fantastic. I liked that a lot.
That's not the one I was talking about.
You were talking about
Homecoming, I think.
Was it Homecoming or No Way Home?
No Way Home, I can't remember. Something like that. Where
the latest one?
Yeah, the new Spider-Man.
The newest one.
He hooked up with Doctor Strange, and he had him try to reverse people's memory or some shit like that, and it caused all kinds of damn problems in the space-time continuum, and bad guys started showing up from fucking the Spider-Man universe, and then, you know, all the other Spider-Mans from the fucking live-action movies showed up. You know, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man showed up. I just thought that was a great movie. I liked it.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with that.
And it was because, like Jenny's saying, the universe wasn't that big. I know that that's only a few characters, and they had movies that backed those characters up where certain things happened. So that's pretty good. But some of that Marvel Universe stuff, there's so many characters that each one of them is in there only like a few seconds at a time.
Well, they're trying to cram so many storylines into one, like that you can't concentrate on one thing.
Yeah,
like I said, I tend to like more intimate stories where I can concentrate on just like a handful of characters and like what they're up to.
Yeah.
Like when you're trying to like build this whole world and it's like, you know, it's really hard for like me to care about this other stuff going on.
Did we announce what Haunting we're watching tonight?
We did not. Somebody asked like a long time ago and I meant to.
Yeah.
We are going to be watching, what did we decide? Echoes of the Past. Right?
Okay. I think that's the one it was.
Echoes of the Past.
We're going to post
and
that.
I'm going to make an announcement too if I remember. Like, I'll make an announcement either tonight or tomorrow, because I know that a lot of you guys have said, you know, when we do a Haunting Mondays, it's like that you wanted us to announce which ones we were going to watch so you could watch them too, like so you could like follow along. So I'm pretty sure we're going to do Echoes of the Past.
Yeah.
For tomorrow, because tomorrow's Haunting.
If anything changes, we'll post it.
Yeah. Caleb says, good news is we got A24 and Blumhouse creating new original small films. Yeah. And I mean, there's so many. Like I said, I'm into horror, so there's so many like independent films. I see amazing horror movies like pretty much weekly, like from just independent filmmakers.
They
and
ought
stuff
to have
like
a
that.
Damn app so you can get that shit a la carte.
Well, I mean, the thing about it, though, I don't know. I just kind of feel like I see when new stuff comes out. I try to keep up with, you know, what's everybody talking about nowadays? Like, what's the good new shit, like, on all those streaming services, like Shudder or whatever? And so, you know, but I've seen, like, so many good, honestly, like, in the last year or two, I've seen, like, some fucking amazing horror movies that were just, like, independent movies or, like, that were, like, people's first movies and shit like that. So, you know,
yeah. Pat hasn't seen the new Spider-Man, but it sounds like, yeah, it's good. The new Spider-Man live action was good. It's got all the old bad guys from the Tobey Maguire ones are in it. Tobey Maguire shows up. Some of the other Spider-Men show up from other movies because Doctor Strange fucks up the damn space time continuum, so it becomes a live action multiverse, kind of like Into the Spider-Verse was all the damn cartoon ones.
Yeah.
Or all in one. This is all, it's like that, but it's all the live action ones.
It was like all the live action ones.
Now, what I was hoping at the time I'm watching this is, wait a minute, is the animated villains or Spider-Man going to show up?
That would have been the only thing that would have made it even better.
That would have been even better. Because it would have been like fucking Cartoon Town and shit, because I wanted to see Spider-Gwen show up.
It would have been, it would have been like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, it'd be like,
which, shit, that's another movie we need to review. Did you ever see Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
A long time ago. Yeah.
Oh, man, that movie is so good. I saw that in the theater. Pat Hatfield said, you should watch Revealer on Shudder. Okay, I will. I don't think I have my paper, but I'll write it down in a second. Tubi and Shudder are awesome streaming services. Yeah, they are. I mean, Tubi, we have Shudder. We've had Shudder forever, and I love Shudder. Tubi is actually like amazing, and it's free. Like, there's ads and stuff, but they have a fuck ton of horror on there. old shit, new shit. Yeah, you gotta wade. Like, their search leaves a little bit to be desired, but they have so many classics on there that you can watch, and they have a bunch of new shit too. There's a lot of like bad new shit, like that's, you know, stuff that you have to wade through, but if you know what you're looking for, a lot of times they'll have it. So, you know what I mean? Let's see. Who else they're talking about? Pat said, I saw a wild movie on Tubi yesterday called Muscle Car. Yeah. But the one I was talking about earlier, Super Dark Times, is actually on Tubi as well. It's also on Hulu, and I think it's on the Roku channel as well. But that's actually, like, a really good movie. But I'm going to put up a review of it later, so I don't want to talk too much about it. But are we ready to sign off? All right. Yeah. So tomorrow is a Haunting Monday, and we're going to watch Echoes of the Past. So if you want to watch along with us, that's when we're going to, I don't remember what season or episode it is, but it's called Echoes of the Past. That's what we're going to watch tonight, and we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. So thanks for hanging out with us on this Sunday evening, and we will see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.